Hello and welcome back to You Only Live Twice with Courtney and Scott.
Hello.
So today we are going to dive into Scott's story and how he is where he is today on his journey, which you'll understand a little bit more as we go through it. But I have my questions the same way that you did with me. So I'm going to go and dive right in. Okay?
Let's do it.
Okay. So, prior to all of this happening, how would you say your life in general was? How are you living it on a daily or weekly basis?
Well, that's a pretty loaded question to start. it was a very monotonous life. I guess the easiest way to describe it would be I ate like crap and it was pretty sedentary. Mm-hmm. And I think I wasn't a heavy drinker. I never smoked. I never did any drugs. But I ate very, very poorly. And so that kind of got me to where I ended up. But I don't think I changed a whole lot from my college days. Just being a two-sport athlete in college, you tend to burn all those calories rather than, I guess, now not having an active lifestyle.
Yeah.
You don't burn those calories anymore.
Yeah. So were you living every day the same? Were you thinking about the future?
Oh, I didn't think about the future at all.
Yeah.
I enjoyed, I guess, the Americanization of food, the fried food aspect of life. I just enjoyed eating.
Yeah.
But I learned as I have grown and evolved that I wasn't happy in my life, and that's kind of where I ate my feelings,
mm-hmm.
so to speak. And I have, I guess, for a very, very long time. It's something that I've battled since childhood, really.
Yeah. Okay. But then it all turned around. So.
Well, it kind of had to.
Well, yes. So, segue into. So, start with where you were at and kind of how everything started on that day.
Well, I think the night before is kind of where it started for me. Mm-hmm. I was in Evansville, Indiana on a work trip. And I remember I went to Buffalo Wild Wings to watch playoff hockey. It was actually a Penguins game 7 in that year, in 2018. And the game went to double overtime. And I made a friend sitting at the bar at B-Dubs watching the game together. And I had a great time that night. Ate a lot of really crappy good food and drank several beers and had a good night. And then went back to my hotel, and had a relatively early morning and just went to sleep. And, what I woke up to, I was very fortunate to wake up to, but I woke up to not pain, mm-hmm. but I woke up to, just kind of like having a heaviness in my breath, like just a heaviness in my chest, and my arms felt asleep. And I remember getting up to go get a drink of water because I just didn't feel good, and almost passing out from doing that. And I went back and laid down, and I couldn't get comfortable. That was the one thing that I just remember the most, is just not being able to be comfortable. This was about 7:30 in the morning, mm-hmm. that I woke up. And I laid there for about 45 minutes. And I ended up, my ex at the time, texting her and saying, I don't, something doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
And she was on a planning period at work, or she was a teacher. And so she ended up calling me and saying, you need to go to the hospital. I wasn't big on doctors. I didn't really.
Wasn't?
No.
Like you are now?
I go to the doctor now.
Yeah.
A lot more frequently.
This is true, yes.
And with less pushback. I never went to the doctor back then because I didn't like hearing bad news. And so I didn't want to hear any bad news that I was actually, something bad was happening. So I got essentially threatened with either you go or I'm calling an ambulance. And I remember packing my stuff up and leaving the hotel and I was going to go to urgent care. That's where I was going to go instead of the hospital. And I don't know why, but this is something that is a very vivid memory of mine. But I remember as I'm walking out of the hotel, you know, a lot of these hotels have like little marketplaces where you can get essentials. Mm-hmm. And I remember walking out of the hotel and just thinking, maybe I should get an aspirin. Because you always see those commercials where they say, if you feel like you're having an issue, take aspirin or or whatnot. I don't know why that came across my mind. I think because subconsciously I knew I was having a heart attack. But I just remember that very vividly. And so I drove myself to Meyer Walk-In Clinic.
Which is even better than a regular urgent care.
Yeah. It was the closest place that I could get to that could take me right away. And so I went to Meyer Walk-In Clinic, and they took my vitals at the desk. I told them the symptoms I was having, and she was like, you probably should go to the hospital. And I'm like, well, it's not that bad. So she took my vitals, and she was like, you probably really should go to the hospital. We don't have anything here that could help you. And I said, well, I don't really feel like that's necessary. She's like, well, then at least go to urgent care. So she scheduled me an appointment for 9:30 in the morning at urgent care, which the ironic part of all this is I had to pass the hospital to get to urgent care. It was across the street. And so I go to urgent care and still feeling the same way. I had to fill out a lot of paperwork.
So what was going through your mind, though, as you're driving there? Are you still in denial?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah, I was trying to downplay everything that I was feeling. Like, it's not that bad. Because I wasn't in pain.
And you were how old at this time?
I was 34 years old.
Yeah.
34. Yeah, 2018.
Yeah.
So I wasn't in pain at all. And so that's where, like, the common misconception when people say you're having a heart attack is pain in the arms. My arms were just asleep.
Yeah.
But I was able to drive myself.
With numb arms.
Yeah. And actually, I thought about driving home, which the reality of it is if I would have tried that, I would have died. So I'm glad I didn't. But I ended up going to urgent care. I told them my symptoms, and this is part of the issue with our healthcare system, I guess, but they made me fill out paperwork and told me to sit down and that somebody would be with me in a minute. As I'm telling them I'm having tightness in my chest and my arms are asleep and my breath is just shallow. Mm-hmm. They didn't seem overly concerned at the front desk, which is an issue. But I sat down and I waited my turn and they called me back. And they did an EKG, is what they hooked me up to right away. And I remember them taking the test and saying that I had to wait for the doctor to read it. And I sat back there. It felt like 20 minutes. I don't know how long it actually was. But again, the one thing that went through my head is I was shirtless.
Mm-hmm.
And not to gross people out, but I could smell myself because I hadn't showered yet that day. And so
Priorities, I get it.
Well, I felt disgusting.
Yeah.
And so I actually, while I was waiting for the doctor to come in, I went to the little sink they have in the rooms and took a paper towel with soap and actually washed my armpits.
So that was considerate.
I thought so.
Yeah.
Because I just had the sense of like, oh, this is going to be a long day.
Yeah.
And then the doctor finally came in and said, you need to go to the hospital right now. And I remember asking right away, saying, am I having a heart attack? And her answer to me was no.
Mm-hmm.
But if I don't do anything, I will. And so she wanted to call me an ambulance to go to the hospital via ambulance. And I said, well, that's not necessary. Yeah. It's across the street.
Yeah.
I was like, I can drive myself. And she's like, but if something happens to you while you drive, even though it's short distance, it would be bad. So I fought the ambulance aspect of it, mainly because of the cost.
Mm-hmm.
Which, hindsight, like, an ER visit and cardiology, like, I would have hit my deductible regardless. So an ambulance ride, a minute and a half, wouldn't have done anything financially for me.
Yeah.
So I drove myself, And I remember calling my ex and telling her, like, hey, I'm going to the hospital. Like, they think something serious is happening. And so I get to the hospital with paperwork, and the doctor at the urgent care told me, give this to the person at the front desk. They know you're coming. You're priority one triage, which sounds very serious to me.
Priority one, nothing's higher than one.
And triage is a very powerful term.
Yeah.
So I park, walk in, give the envelope, which is sealed, to the receptionist and say, hey, I was told to come here. I was told I was priority one triage. Here's my paperwork. They're supposed to be expecting me. Well, the receptionist says, okay, we'll have a seat and they'll be right with you. And which, again, like, it's just mind-boggling to me that I was told twice to have a seat while I'm mid-heart attack. Luckily, I didn't sit down for more than 5-10 seconds. Like, it was, I sat down and they came and got me right away. And I walked back. And from that moment on, my life changed. And I tell people, and I describe it as this, it was from the moment I walked through those double doors, it was the most controlled chaos I have ever experienced in my life. I had one nurse walk me down the hallway, and as soon as I got to the room, there's two others waiting there. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I laid down, I had two others come in. There was five nurses at one time, and they were taking my clothes off, and they were hooking things up to me. The only thing they didn't do was take my sandals off. I was ended up being butt naked in just my sandals. But they were all had a role and a purpose. And I wasn't in that room, in the emergency room, which they aren't really rooms, they're kind of just quadrants. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't in there but 5 minutes at the most. They had things hooked up, they ran an EKG, and the doc, the ER doctor came right in and read it. And said, take him now, he's having a heart attack. Which, those words are very, very scary.
Yeah. Now, before that, were you scared, or was it all kind of surreal?
It was very surreal. I was in denial. I was like, oh, it's not that bad.
Yeah.
Just
the wings, a little gassy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Indigestion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was spicy wings.
Oh, duh.
Yeah, of course. It was wild sauce, so I thought it could have been heartburn.
Yeah.
But my first thought was my kids. At that time, 2018, my kids were 4 and 6. And so my first thought was them. And so they called my ex-wife at the time and said, hey, this is serious. He's having a heart attack. He's going into surgery right now. If you want to see him, you probably should get down here. And so I remember them wheeling me right away, and the cardiologist kind of, as I'm turning, meeting me on the turn and introducing himself, Dr. Chili. I can't pronounce his last name. We just called him Chili.
Like Skyline?
Yeah. Which I haven't had since.
What a coincidence.
And him just introduced himself, said, hey, we got you. And I remember being wheeled into the operating room, still butt-ass naked. They don't care to cover you up when it's emergency.
Right.
I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
And as I got into the operating room, again, I just have random thoughts, and like, there's vivid memories with it. I had to pee so bad that it was very uncomfortable. Like, mm-hmm. And I just asked them when I got there, I said, can I just go to the bathroom? And they looked at me like I was crazy. And the chief nurse that was in there looked at me and says, I don't think you understand how serious this is. And I said, no, I do. I just have to pee. And she said, you're not getting up. I can give you...
the bedpan?
Essentially, to pee in. And I looked around and I'm like, there's probably a dozen people in this room. Like, there is no way I'm just flat peeing right now. And so those that know me say, I mean, I do have a pretty good sense of humor. When the doctor came in to kind of give me like, hey, this is serious surgery. Like, these are the risks. And after he was finished, I just said, well, doc, I just want to let you know, if you push in the wrong spot, I have to pee really bad. That was my response to him telling me that there's a 1 in 1,000 chance that I could die.
Yeah.
But I was awake through the whole thing.
How was that?
It was long. It was very long. They went in through my groin, mm-hmm. so they had to shave mm-hmm. areas, and then they had to numb it. But there was a screen that I could see that he was looking at as he put a camera in my artery to kind of find where the blockage was. And they wanted me awake the whole time so I could tell them what I was feeling. And so I had to actually converse with the nurse and the doctor. And I remember the other vivid memory I have is him saying, "There it is." Essentially finding the blockage. And him telling me what they were going to do from that point. And essentially I had 100% blockage in my left circumflex. Which most people don't survive that. Mm-hmm. It's what it's in an area that not essentially the Widowmaker, but it's kind of in that area.
Yeah.
And so they put something called a balloon in me. And the purpose is they take it up to the point of the blockage and they inflate the balloon and it widens your artery so that the blockage releases. And I remember him telling me that's what they were going to do. And so that was the most painful part of the whole process, which is surprising to most. But when you blow a balloon up in your artery and your artery expands twice the size of what it should be, it's very painful.
Yeah. It doesn't sound normal.
But as soon as they did that and they deflated the balloon, it was instant relief.
Yeah.
Because I was getting proper blood flow back to my heart. And that's when they put the stent in and kind of finished up. But that was kind of how my morning went. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what time it was when the surgery was done. I know that by the time I got out of surgery and up to the ICU, my mom had gotten there, and my ex-wife had gotten there relatively quickly after. And so it was within 3 or 4 hours. So it was a pretty lengthy procedure. But that was how my morning went.
Yeah.
But that wasn't even the worst part, come to find out. As the rest of the day went on.
So, you go through recovery. You're done, in theory. What is going through your mind whenever you're done with the surgery?
Oh, shit. I was exhausted.
Yeah.
But when I was done with the surgery, I thought I was out of the woods. Mm-hmm. And I thought, like, holy crap, I can't believe that just happened to me.
Yeah.
It was still denial of, like, why me? And so there was some pretty heavy, just deflating on why did I have to go through that? So, like, I remember feeling very sorry for myself, and it was pretty dark moments. I didn't have a whole lot of time immediately after to think about a whole lot, because little did I know my day would get worse. But I remember feeling fortunate that I was alive also.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of things that happen after. There's a lot of follow-ups, there's a lot of check-ins, there was a lot of people around me immediately after I got up there, and there wasn't a whole lot of alone time.
Yeah, to process or
no.
Okay, so you think that you're in the clear.
Mm-hmm.
You can finally relax somewhat.
I feel bad for this guy.
You got to pee though, right?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
Okay. I did. For the important part. Okay.
I did. And I got to eat. But I feel bad for this gentleman. His name is Dave. And his nickname is Heart Attack Dave. And he is a very direct human being. But he is a good guy. And I remember my nurse Lauren was kind of going through like, hey, you have to lay flat for 4 hours because you have sutures in your groin, and if you don't or you move or whatnot, your sutures will rupture and then you have to get restitched and the whole process starts all over again. So I remember being like, I have to lay flat for 4 hours, and my body went under a lot of stress for the last 8 hours of the day. But I remember Dave coming in and him telling me like, hey, this is what you can expect over the next 4 or 5 days. And that was when I realized, holy tar, I'm like, this was a Tuesday morning. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to be in here for a week. And like that was also a reality of like, holy crap, this is pretty serious. So I remember Dave coming in and kind of telling me, hey, this is what to expect over the next 4 to 5 days. You're going to have to do the X, Y, and Z. We got to put you through what they call heart attack class so that you can learn, hey, what happened to you? How do we prevent it? And the lifestyle changes you need to make. And kind of him talking about all of this stuff was very stressful. And I remember, it just like the weight started like really building in me. And then I remember feeling, the easiest way I can describe it is like when you stand up too quick and your blood pressure kind of drops, that tingly kind of blacked out feeling that you can get. Mm-hmm. That is what essentially started, like a waves of it started to come over me. And so I felt it a good 1 to 2 seconds. And apparently my face just went white. And the last thing I remember is Dave, his face going from talking to his eyes getting really wide and yelling, I'm getting the crash cart. And then I heard the beeps and then I was out.
Yeah.
And I went into what they call VTech. And I had 31 irregular heartbeats. It's where one chamber of your heart is beating faster than the other chamber. So it was just out of rhythm. Apparently it's pretty common when your heart goes through a heart attack and kind of everything that happened with me. So I went into VTech. And I was able to come out of it. I wasn't shocked. My body kind of was able to come out of it on its own, which it's more normal than not, is what they told me, that it's just your heart's way of saying it's ticked off, and it just has to kind of work through. All right, I didn't have what I have now, and the more blood flow and less blood flow and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I popped my stitches. And so I was bleeding all over the place. So I woke up, I felt like I was peeing myself. And I was confused because like I did go to the bathroom. but it was just blood.
It was bleeding out.
Yeah. And so I was losing a lot of blood. And so I felt very groggy and weak because of that. So they had to restitch me up. I had to give me blood. And then I had to start the process all over again of laying flat. But I remember Dave being very apologetic, thinking that he caused me to go into VTech by explaining how bad I just treated my body and everything I was going to have to do and whatnot. And so I did feel bad for Dave because he didn't do anything. But he did feel bad. So yeah, that was one of the scarier parts of it, losing the consciousness and flatlining. Mm-hmm. Knowing that my heart, it just essentially was saying I had too much.
Yeah.
So I was able to come out with a little CPR and not the paddles, which I guess is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But my heart just needed a break for a second. Needed a essentially the way they described it to me was it just needed a restart. It needed to go through what it went through to be able to restart and kind of begin a new journey.
Yeah. So, you only live twice.
I tell you though, like I the running joke that I had was I brought the average age of that cardiac wing in that hospital, Deaconess in Evansville, Indiana. I brought the average age down quite a bit.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because I would go on walks around the cardiac wing just as I was kind of rehabilitating. And yeah, there was not a lot of people my age in that wing.
Yeah.
And as I learned and talked to nurses who were awesome with me, there's not a lot of people that take this serious. Like they feel like, oh, I got a new lease, my arteries are clear.
Yeah.
You know, they cleaned it up for me. I just wasn't that person.
Mm-hmm. So before you had the crash, you was talking about how you'd have to go through these classes and learn mm-hmm. the new way that you have to live.
Yep.
And you obviously took that seriously. So I guess what was the first thing you did to change whenever you got home?
I eliminated fried foods from my life. And I started cooking everything fresh.
Mm-hmm.
So stop going out, stop eating fast food, stop drinking soda. I haven't had soda since.
Yeah.
I haven't ate fast food since. And that used to be a regular part of my diet every day.
Yeah.
And so I started cooking my food. Because you can control more what you put in your body when you cook it. And so that was the biggest change that I made. Plus, the exercise aspect.
Yeah.
I exercise 6 days a week now. Back then, it was every day. Like, I'd go on 2-3 mile walks every single day.
Yeah.
And I would limit my portion control to where I was calorie deficient. It's easier now to maintain than it was to lose. But that was the biggest thing is I had to cut a lot of salt out of my life. And so, as you know now, like I don't eat a lot of sodium. I don't put salt on things. A lot of the things I eat are low sodium or no salt. Just because it's a way for me to have control over what I put in my body. And so outside the weekends now, I don't really relax a whole lot.
Yeah.
But that was one thing that I learned and how I needed to was the diet aspect. And it wasn't so much going on a diet. People ask me all the time, like, how to do it? And I said, it was a lifestyle change.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a diet. Diet, they call yo-yo diets for a reason. Because you go up and down. And for me, I couldn't go up and down. I had to make the change so that I could lose significant weight and get healthier. My cardiologist, I remember the first time he came in after my heart attack, he told me, he goes, dude, you need to lose 50 pounds. And I was like, holy, that sounded so daunting to me.
Mm-hmm.
I lost 90. I lost 50 pounds in 4 months.
That's amazing.
And I remember going back to Evansville, Indiana after I had gotten sick for the first time. It was in September, and my heart attack was in May. So it was 4 months. Almost to the day. And I was back in Evansville. And I made it a point to go back to the hospital to see the doctors and nurses that saved my life. And at that point, when I did that, I was 50 pounds lighter. They didn't even recognize me.
Yeah.
Which was the coolest thing for me. And I remember walking the halls with Dr. Chile and just having a conversation with him and seeing how he was actually proud. Because as I learned being in the hospital for a week, not a lot of people take their advice.
Yeah.
And they see a lot of repeat patients. And it's frustrating to them. And for me, I wasn't going to allow myself to not take it serious. And those that saved my life feel like it wasn't worth their time.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think, but then having a lot of older people that are stuck in their ways, yeah, they see it as, I got a second chance and it took me this long, so it'll take another 60 years. Whereas the last thing you want to do is think you have to do it every 34 years.
Well, as I found out, not many 34-year-olds survive it. Yeah. That's the difference.
Yeah.
I just got lucky.
Yeah.
So I wasn't going to, I was going to take full advantage of my luck. And so, yeah.
So other than the diet change and the exercise, which, not that that's small, but, I mean, how did it affect the rest of your life and how you viewed life in general?
I had to do what I wanted to do in life to make myself happy. Mm-hmm. I couldn't no longer live my life for other people, which sounds very selfish, but I did that. And I needed to remove people that were toxic in my life out of my life. Mm-hmm. And so if you didn't bring value to my life, then you weren't going to be in it.
Yeah.
I just couldn't allow it. It added too much stress and pressure to me. And what I learned was that stress just built up, and how I dealt with it was very unhealthy. Mm-hmm. I dealt with it by eating. And that's not healthy at all. And so I distanced myself from those people that were just a very negative influence on my life. And that wasn't easy to do.
Right.
But it was necessary for me. And I had to chase my dreams, what I wanted to do.
So would you say in the grand scheme of things, you're grateful for the experience that you went through?
Ironically, yeah. It saved my life.
Yeah.
Which is ironic to say that a heart attack saved my life, but it did.
Yeah.
If I didn't have it, I would be dead. Because they would have gotten a lot worse. I wouldn't have made any changes.
Yeah.
I wasn't happy, but I was content. I was in a life that I was just surviving in.
Yeah.
And so I would have gotten a lot worse. Which is why I try to be an example for others. I don't try to tell others what to do. I'm here to listen and help people. It's not easy to do what I did. I know that. And some people just don't want to.
Yeah.
But yeah. I know what the reality of that action is going to be, though.
Yeah, because there's a difference between existing and living.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think that's one thing with both of us and how busy we are with the kids and everything, and people are like, oh my gosh, you guys are always busy, and how can you live a life like that? And, you know, one of my best friends can't even imagine doing half the stuff that we do, but I think to both of us, if we slowed down, we almost feel like we're doing a disservice.
Mm-hmm. We're living our life.
Yeah.
We're not going to exist in it. We're going to live it.
Yeah. As, by the way, we're sitting in our RV to record the podcast because it's the only quiet place that we can be at today, yep. Which actually seems to work out pretty well. Okay, so knowing this is getting towards the end, if you had to give somebody a tip that's listening about any part of your experience or anything, what would be, like, your words of wisdom?
Don't be afraid of change.
Yeah.
Change is necessary to make you happy. You don't have to stay in a stuck life if you don't want to. I know it's difficult to make changes, mm-hmm. but change is necessary to be happy in life.
Yeah. I second that. I think we'll get into that more, but some of our other changes that we made in our life then too, where we do what we know needs to be done, mm-hmm. no matter what, so.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you guys for being along for hearing Scott's story on how he is, who he is today, and mine the last week. So next week we'll get you a new one, and hopefully you can share this if it touched you in any way at all. Appreciate your time. Thanks, everyone.
Have a good day.